Good afternoon. Welcome to Midday. I have no idea what the temperature is, but suffice it to say it's very hot outside, and it's going to get hotter. So our guests today are Diana Hallwadel. Hallwadel, right, Diana? Did I get that?
Yes, you did.
See, and I even practiced it. Anyway, Diana is the child advocate recruiter for the Guardian Ad Litem Program, 5th Judicial District, Circuit. And also with us today is Sandy Roth, who's a volunteer for the Guardian Ad Litem. And we're going to hear about the program, but also about what a child advocate does. And I think the Guardian Ad Litem program has interesting roots dating back to the Federal Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act of 1974. And the idea, I found this interesting, the actual idea of speaking up for children in court came from a Seattle juvenile court judge in 1977. That led to the Guardian Ad Litem program and then what's known as CASA, the court-appointed special advocates. Mm-hmm. The history of this program has been around for a while. Diana, how long has the Guardian Ad Litem program been in Hernando County?
Well, in the state of Florida, we're 35 years. We just had just celebrating our 35th anniversary.
Excellent.
In Florida.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the Fifth Circuit,
Judicial Circuit.
Does that just cover Hernando County?
It's Hernando, Citrus, Marion, Lake, and Sumter County is the Fifth Judicial Circuit. Florida is divided into 20 judicial circuits.
Wow.
So we're the fifth.
Okay. I've always been confused about that whole circuit thing. But that means that you folks are pretty busy because hopefully you've recruited volunteers from all those counties as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
well,
absolutely.
Good. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the program and what the purpose is. Obviously advocating for children, but we want to talk about what this program actually does, what our volunteers are charged with. Do you want to take that one, Sandy?
The Guardian Ad Litem program is designed to advocate in court for the best interest of the children when their parents, for whatever reason, have lost custody, either temporary or more long-term. So when parents have difficulties, either they have problems with domestic violence or they're arrested or they become addicted to drugs and certain levels of alcoholism that result in their child being brought to the attention of the Department of Children and Families, the state. The Guardian Ad Litem is an appointed position. We are volunteers, all of us, and our job is to look after the best interest of the children. When parents lose their children and they're sheltered, something has happened. There's an abuse report that's called in or something that triggers the attention of the authorities.
And would that be the first time you're aware?
It's typically about the time that we become aware.
Okay.
Once that's investigated by child protective investigators who are aligned with the sheriff's department in Hernando County, and it's determined that there is a really good reason for these children to be removed and either placed with relatives or friends or into the foster system. The Guardian Ad Litem program is appointed to look after the best interest while the parents go through a process of fulfilling judicial requirements, requirements that the judge will require in their case plan to prove to the court that they now are able to have their children returned and that the children will be safe in their care. That the parents have remedied whatever it was that brought the case about in the first place.
So, Sandy, excuse me, are there some situations where you don't even have to go to court with these children because the parents don't even want to get the children back?
Well, we always go to court.
You always do.
There are times when very early on the parents realize or rarely don't care enough. It does happen sometimes where people just don't care.
Yeah.
And they decide to relinquish their parental rights.
But you still have to go through the court.
We still go through a court process because there is a law in Florida that has a bias towards children being with their parents.
Yeah.
So our job is to figure out from our perspective, and our perspective is solely what's in the best interest of this child, not what's in the best interest of the mother or the father or the grandparents or anything, but what is the best interest of this child given all of the circumstances, our job is to make a recommendation to the court about what the resolution of all of this should be after a period of time.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about that process of you must have to be able to sit with the children and talk and get to know them a bit.
Indeed.
Too, right? Okay, we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back here on Midday on JB Radio. I'm Deanna Damer-Kimbrough. Welcome back to Midday. Our guests from the Guardian Ad Litem program is our child advocate recruiter, Diana Hallwaydell. I'm just going to call you Diana.
That works.
Anyway, and also one of the volunteers, Sandy Roth. And Sandy, we left off, we were talking about the process once you get the case, I'll call it a case. Is the first thing you do is meet with the child or the children?
When you're appointed by the judge, and you're given documents that represent all of the facts and the factors at that point that are involved in the case. So the first thing I always do is read through everything so I know who all the parties are. It's not infrequent that there are a couple of dads, there are sometimes a couple of moms.
Oh, sure.
And,
yeah.
You know, and some,
sure.
Sometimes they're MIA, sometimes you know exactly where they are, sometimes they're incarcerated. Certainly, one of the very first things I want to do after immersing myself in the details is to find the child, visit with the child, and introduce myself. If it's an infant, I'm primarily talking with the caregiver, of course. If it's a teenager at the other end of the spectrum, then I want to learn from that child their perspective he or she has on the circumstances in which he or she finds himself. So certainly you meet with the child. The more we know about these children, the better our opinion in court is, and the better it's taken from the judge about our opinion about what's in the child's best interest. Yeah. So we immerse over a period of sometimes a year or more that these cases can go on. The law requires 12 months. It can be longer under special circumstances. So we immerse in things like talking with their teachers, spending time with their counselors, looking at their medical and dental records, spending time with their relatives. Their parents are people we want to get to know as much as possible. The caregivers, seeing the child in as many possible circumstances as possible, visiting the child in their shelter home, wherever that is, seeing the child at school or daycare, visiting with the child when they're having visits with their parents so we can speak about that interaction. So we're really looking at the totality of this individual child or children's circumstances.
That's a real commitment for the volunteers.
It is.
Mm-hmm. I honestly did not realize there was that much time involved. I realized the importance of the situation and assumed some of the things you were just describing, but I didn't realize it's a Florida law. It has to be at least a year.
The parents are given a year from the date of shelter to complete what's called a case plan, essentially to show the judge that they have remedied the issues that brought the case about in the first place. We're required by statute, and when we agree to be a guardian for a child, we agree to have eyes on that child at least once every month. Now, that is essentially 12 times during the year. But because most of us want to see children in different circumstances, we will often do those visits in different locations. So it's sometimes more often than once a month.
And that makes sense because they'll be kind of guarded with you sometimes, the children.
Sometimes they are, but I will tell you the sad part is that sometimes they're not, in the sense that the guardian is often the most stable person in their life at this point. Their parent visits with them once a week at a visitation center, or sometimes it's supervised, sometimes they're able to see them unsupervised. They have a foster parent, or they're with a grandmother. Sometimes, sadly, some children move from placement to placement to placement.
Yeah.
And many times we are the most consistent person in that child's life. I had one case that went on for over 3 years, and the children were in several placements, and I was the only one who saw that child in that case from its inception through to its completion. Caseworkers go in and out. They change frequently, but the guardians tend to be, you know, once we get a case, we stick with it.
Yeah.
Like, sort of like a favorite aunt to them.
Exactly right.
It comes to, they know they can, oh, Auntie, Auntie Sandy's here.
Exactly. And children, I mean, the heartbreaking thing is when I visit children in daycare centers, and I always have my guardian ID on, I walk in there and there'll be 5 or 6 children who will come up and say, are you my guardian? Now, that's the thing that breaks my heart. And it's difficult because there are so many children who need the support of a guardian ad litem. And fortunately, through Diana's efforts and the efforts of our entire program, we are recruiting more volunteers all the time.
Good.
We don't have a guardian for every child who needs one, but we are working hard in this circuit as well as the state to reach that 100% mark. So every child has an advocate.
When we come back, I'm going to talk about what happens in the courtroom. And I realize that if we spent 2 days talking about that, we couldn't cover it all. I realize that. But just a little brief situation about who's in the courtroom when we
sure.
do this. Okay. We'll be back with Midday. More from our Guardian Ad Litem program. Please stay tuned to JB Radio. Welcome back to JB Radio and our Midday program. Our guests from the Guardian Ad Litem program. And Sandy, we're going back into the courtroom now.
Yes.
What does it look like when you get in there? Who actually can be in that session?
Actually, anyone can walk into the court because in Florida we have sunshine laws, and so anyone can come in.
Even when it's about a child?
Exactly.
Or a juvenile?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, that's
the law.
Disturbing.
Yeah, the disturbing part of the law is that just recently, about a year ago, the legislature changed the law to allow all children to attend all hearings. Now, there are some times when that makes sense, and there are some times when it doesn't. And it ends up what judge is on as to whether they sort of insist the child is there.
Oh.
But any child who's in dependency can say, I want to come to court, and they are allowed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So who are the players? Certainly you have the judge or the magistrate. We have amazing judges. We have a fabulous magistrate in this county.
That's who good to hear.
Is so committed to these children. And so you have that plus the court employees. Then you have the Department of Children and Families, their attorney, who is an attorney for the department, for the state. You have the caseworker, and often the caseworker's supervisor. And that caseworker's job is to ensure that the parents have the services they need in order to complete their case plan. So if a parent, for example, had a problem with anger, or there's domestic violence in the home, and that's what prompted this to happen, the case plan will require the parent to take either domestic violence victim courses or batterer's intervention plan, something like that.
Good.
And the caseworker is responsible for making the referrals to the agencies that are subcontracted by the state to provide all of those services. So the caseworker is there.
Oh, the caseworker from Department of Family
Department
and Children.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Children and Families.
Right. Then we have X number of parents. And each of those parents has either a private attorney, which is rare, or a court-appointed attorney if financially they cannot afford to represent themselves in court. So we have the X number of parents. Each one of those gets a separate attorney. then the guardian ad litem is there, I am there, my coordinator is there, and my attorney, the guardian ad litem attorney, is there as well. So there are a lot of people standing around there, all of whom have a real commitment to trying to make this family whole by giving the parents the resources they need to become parents who are entitled to have their kids back, and ensuring in that process, while the parents are working on that, that the children remain safe, they get counseling if it's necessary, they get medical and dental services, they get help in school, those kinds of things. We are just laser focused on whether this child is getting everything this child needs when their life has been disrupted through truly no fault of their own.
Well, right. Mm-hmm. And that's where the guardianship comes in.
Yes.
And the being the advocate for these children. Oh, I'm sort of worn out just listening to what the process is. It's typical when you're dealing, I mean, and I'm not making light of this, when you're dealing with lives.
Yes.
Yeah.
It should be sort of layered and complicated. Mm-hmm. Because
it should be.
Everyone needs
yes, because
to have
these,
rights.
These children have a right to be cared for properly. And we're looking for whether or not the parents can bring these children into adulthood as functioning people. That's really the goal.
And yeah, I read something on the website for the guardian ad litem. It said that independent research has demonstrated that children with a guardian ad litem volunteer are substantially less likely to spend time in long-term foster care and less likely to re-enter care.
Yes. And part of it is because we are always looking for opportunities and options. We're always thinking, is there some other place for this child? Mm-hmm. Is there a person who could care for them? Is there a relative in Ohio? What are the advantages out there that we could make happen for this child? So we fight really hard.
Well, I know you do, and I knew that instinctively, but I didn't know all of the components that made you have to work so hard. Obviously, there's a passion for it and a real concern, or because it is a big commitment. When we come back, we'll talk about that. We'll talk to Diana about the recruiting process and what you look for when you're recruiting. It's kind of hard to top Sandy. Right. We'll be back with more on Midday on JB Radio. I'm Deanna Damer Kimbrough. Thank you so much for tuning in. Our guests from Guardian Ad Litem and Diana, it sounds to me that the recruiting process must be very intricate.
It's a process, but of course we guide you, the volunteer, through it step by step. Essentially, they will get in contact with me, and I set up a time to interview them. They come in for an interview. We discuss the program. And I also like to discuss what their motivation is wanting to be a guardian.
That was one of my questions.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So what their motivation is, what it is that brings them to the program, what they bring to the table, what skills they have or experiences that they have that are going to benefit them in their role as a guardian ad litem. After that, we do background screens. We do a local background screen as well as send them for fingerprints. Those fingerprints are then sent to the FBI, and they do a national background screen.
Yes,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
And then the training process goes in three phases. It's a total of about 30 hours. There's an independent study portion where they learn about, they watch some videos on effective advocacy, look at child development, the effects of abuse on child development, and an overview of the Department of Children and Families of the child welfare system. The second phase of training is 2 days of classroom training where we do a lot of training in their legal training, diversity training. Sandy actually does some of that training with us, meeting the child and giving them information on how to interact with the children, meeting the families, that sort of thing. So that's 2 full days of training there. And then the third phase of training, and this is something we just started this year at the beginning of January, this was implemented, is our field work. And at that time, the volunteer actually gets paired with a mentor. So it's one of our seasoned volunteers. There's a step-by-step process that they go through during that fieldwork process. they'll do a court watch. We set them up. They come up into court, and we sit them right in the jury box so they can watch the dependency hearings, get a feel for who all the parties are and the interaction and their role in the courtroom. The mentor will go with them on their first visit with the child, go over the court documents with them, their case files, really give them a good, firm footing to move forward on their case. So that process can be 3 to 4 weeks that they're working with the mentor.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And I would think they'd want even more sometimes. Right?
Well, and here's the thing is that even if, I mean, if they need more time or the mentor feels that they need a little more time with them, absolutely. Even once they finish that process, and they're fully certified guardian ad litem, the mentor's still there. There's still people in the office. Every volunteer is assigned to a child advocacy manager. So these are staff members in our office. They oversee a group of the volunteers and their cases. It really is a team effort. The guardian is, it's not like, okay, you're certified now, you're on your own, way you go.
Yeah, that wouldn't work.
No, there's always a really good team. And a lot of people, when I interview them or talk to them about the program, you know, they think about or say to me, wow, that's a lot of responsibility. And Sandy talked about some of the things that we do. It is, but you know what, you're not making those decisions on your own. You've got a whole team behind you. There's our attorneys in our program, your child advocacy manager. So it's really a team effort. And the training now, compared to what it was in the past, it was good training before. I think the training is tenfold better. And it really gives the guardians a lot of preparation for their role as a guardian ad litem.
And I know, Diana, you are a volunteer yourself.
Yes.
Were you a volunteer before you came the recruiter?
No, I kind of did both at the same time.
You did?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, I did.
So you went out and cloned yourself.
Right.
Well, yeah. I first of all, I really admire the work that you do because personally, I don't think I could do it because I would get too emotionally involved. Is that an issue at some point?
But you do get emotionally involved. You can't not. And to do this type of work, you've got to have that passion and compassion for
That's
children.
True.
And you're going to get emotionally involved. But and I've had people say that to me, oh, it would break my heart. I can't, you know. And yes, you get your case and you read through that investigator's report and on cases that I've had and I've read them and it just, oh, I feel so bad. But you know what the wonderful thing is now you're part of a team that's working towards getting a good resolution for these children. And in the end, they're going to be in a safe, secure, happy home. And that's the wonderful thing about it. Yes, on the front side, case first comes to you, it can break your heart to see what these children have gone through, but you're part of a solution for them, and that's a wonderful thing.
Well, and you just answered my next question is the real upside of that must be the fruit of the labor, so to speak. Let's say you reunited a family and you've gone through all the steps that Sandy was talking about, if they had to have some kind of counseling or anger management or whatever they have to go through. Are you able to keep in touch with those children
if
long term?
Once the case is closed, if it's okay with their parent or caregiver.
This is always a dilemma, and this is what people are curious about. I have my own opinion about it. My job is to do everything possible to help this child end up in a safe home with people who can take care of that child and give that child what he or she needs. I think for me to back out of it allows that family unit to construct themselves without the intervention of other eyes, which is more normal. What we're trying to do is get something back to whatever normal is.
Okay, I understand that.
And there are times when teenagers do what we call age out. They end up in the foster system. They turn 18. They've not been adopted, sometimes because they don't want to be adopted. But we've taken them through an independent living process and giving them all of the tools and resources that the law allows us to give them. They turn 18. And at that point, I know many guardians who stay in touch with those young people as they go about making decisions about going to college and getting jobs and that kind of thing. But typically, when children have been reunited, our work is done. Mm-hmm. And we step out of it, as we should, because the family needs to be its own set of resources.
And you have to move on probably to another case.
To another case, yes.
It isn't as if, oh, this is my only one for this year. Yeah. Well,
and
that's a good point. Is it your only one for a year? Do you stick with that one before you get assigned another one?
No, not necessarily. Okay, so we have guardians. We have some that have several cases because we don't have enough guardians to take all the cases. So we do have some that have several cases. But really, it's not a mandatory thing that you take more than one case. It's really what your time availability is as far as how many cases that you want to have. So if as long as you have one case and you follow that through, that's fine. I've had four. I just had two that closed. So now I'm just down to two. I don't know how many Sandy's working on.
I have six right now.
Well, you two are old pros at this. How long have you been doing this, Sandy?
Almost 9 years now.
And Diana?
I'm just coming up on a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've been with the program.
Holy moly.
We try to match, wherever possible, the guardian to the case. So, for example, a 15-year-old teenage boy is often more comfortable with a guardian who is male versus female. Some guardians prefer not to work with infants. Some guardians love to work with infants. So we try very much to place people where they feel they could be most effective. You know, I think the important thing, because we're talking about the level of the work we do. I make a big distinction when I'm talking with people about this. There are lots of ways in which you can help children. You can read to them at the library. You can become a big brother or a big sister. None of those types of volunteer jobs have a deeper commitment other than going to the library on time as agreed and reading and enjoying the children. So there are many people for whom that's a really good way to contribute to the world around them. There are others who would like to take on something a little bit more challenging. Being a guardian is a serious commitment. So we ask for serious commitment from people, that they will stick with it and that it's not a casual thought. And I think the recruiting and training process helps people figure out if this is for them or not.
Well, it sounds like, especially the classroom time and the other training, the commitment to that. Do you have a test at the end of this? You said they have to be certified. So is there a written test?
There's not a test, no, but they have to complete all those facets of training, all the units that are part of the independent study, the classroom, and then, of course, the field work. But that commitment, and when I do interview potential volunteers, I talk about that quite extensively, about the commitment. A minimum of 1 year we expect, or that's our expectation. We understand life happens, and someone may be all gung-ho and I'm going to be with you guys for a long time, and something, you know, happens health-wise or that sort of thing, and they have to back out from the program. But the expectation is at least 1 year. We want to be, and as Sandy said earlier, we are almost always that one consistent person, and we want to give that to that child. So we don't want, you know, different guardians coming in and out of that child's life.
And
so
the guardian is important. Never alone. The guardian always has her or his team.
Yes,
has
absolutely.
The manager has the attorney, and also has all the other guardians. We get together regularly at a different restaurant in a private room, and we talk about cases with one another. We help each other out.
Yes.
So
we're networking. And that makes sense, too. I guess that's another thing I just sort of assume, but if you have time, that's the only thing I'm thinking out. You have time to even have a social life, but I'm exaggerating, obviously.
But, yeah.
We'll take another break when we come back. More from our guardian ad litem folks on Midday on JB Radio. I'm Deanna Damer Kimbrough. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Midday. Our guests from Guardian Ad Litem, the program that advocates for children, actually right there in the courtroom, and Diana Hallwadel and Sandy Roth, our guest. Sandy's a volunteer Diana is the recruiter, but she's also a volunteer.
Right.
And we have a few more minutes. Let's talk about, if you can, and I know we can't do names or whatever, but can we do some examples of the kinds of things you've had to go into the courtroom over, and maybe mention a couple of successes, because those are always good to hear too. And I know for you too, especially.
I want to talk about the most successful case I ever had.
Good.
Because I will tell you that at the beginning of this case, I would not have given these parents 10 cents to succeed. Very young parents with an infant who was born drug dependent, and then an older child who was extremely malnourished. The infant was sheltered at the NICU, the neonatal intensive care unit at the hospital, and the other child was put into foster home. And we were able to get the infant and the 4-year-old in the same foster home, which was really excellent.
And is that unusual?
It is unusual, because foster homes can often not take multiple children.
Yeah.
But in this case, they were able to do it. These parents had drug problems. They were very, very young. They were unemployed. They were living with relatives who also had drug problems. And through the efforts of an amazing caseworker, an absolutely amazing caseworker, and the Guardian program, we and drug court, which is something that is really, really helpful in our system, to put parents into drug court so that they are able to deal with these issues. The magistrate was fantastic, and over a period of about a year and a half, these parents got clean. We were able to find them an affordable apartment. We were able to find them jobs. They started earning money for the first time ever. They got clean. They got off drugs. They got a place to live. They bought a small car so they could get back and forth. Their children were reunited. This is 2 or 3 years later, and I go into that particular store where both the parents are employed, and I see them, and I say to them, "How's your family doing?" They remember me, and they are working on different shifts. They tell me about what's going on. They are amazing parents. And I just, it's that for me was the most successful case, because I did not think they could do it.
Well, I want to take a call, all right?
Okay.
If you're all prepared for this. We'll take a call. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. That was a wonderful story that I just heard.
Wasn't it?
That would make it all worthwhile.
Made me want to applaud.
I have a question, and it goes on the basis of this lawsuit-happy society that we currently are living in. And this deals with your history with the volunteers. Is there situations where the volunteers, not that their own fault, but get sued for either being, alone in the confines of a minor, or maybe... you're working with a minor whose parents are gone off the deep end. Could you speak about the situation like that? And I can hang up and just listen to the show.
Okay, thank you, caller.
I we hear questions, not that one, but similar ones. And the question is, are we safe as guardians?
That's a good question.
Specifically to the caller, we have absolutely no exposure whatsoever, period, end of story. It's never an issue. We also are smart enough, and we're coached by our coordinators about when and where to do certain things. So if we have any reservation about being alone with a child in a certain place, then we're smart. We get somebody to go with us. We always take care of our own safety first. So that is not an issue, and it should be of no concern. Mm-hmm. We never put ourselves into dangerous situations, ever.
No. Good.
So there's that part. The second part is, this is a safe volunteer. This is really important for people to hear. Parents are not threatening to us. We are always in a safe circumstance. We see them in court. The judge supports us. If the parents speak out against us, the judge will admonish that parent. Yes. So the judge or the magistrate makes it perfectly clear that we are a legitimate party to this whole process, and we are protected in every possible way. This is a very safe volunteer role.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to have no concern about that whatsoever.
I'm glad the caller brought that up then.
Absolutely,
That's a good point. Thank you.
Yes.
And we have a couple more minutes we can talk. Do you have a success story?
I just had a case close, actually just a couple weeks ago. So two children that were reunified with their father. And what happens is once reunification occurs, we're still involved in the process for 6 more months. There's supervision for 6 months after the child's been reunified. So that 6 months is now up. So, although I don't have to go visit anymore, and when you asked earlier about interaction with the child after the case is closed, there's a 12-year-old girl in this case. So she's with dad, so there's no mom. So I've spent more time sort of with her doing, you know, teaching her how to do her hair and getting little hair things. So she says to me, she goes, well, you know, I'm really happy that the case is closed, but she says, does that mean I can't talk to you anymore? And I said, well, if it's okay with dad, you know, you can still text me now and then. And so she, you know, but it's wonderful because they're so happy, and it's such a joy to see that the father did everything he needed to do, and the kids are back home happy, and it's that's the best part of this. I get goosebumps thinking about it and talking about it.
And you know, we define sex success in lots of ways.
Right.
Clearly, the best possible success is for the child or children to be reunified with a parent who is now able to care for them properly.
Right.
But success sometimes is terminating the parental rights of the parent if the parent is not able to care for the child. So if that is the result and the parental rights are terminated and the child is available for adoption and is adopted by a wonderful family, that's success for us, because remember, we're about the child.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You're right. I'm glad you brought that up, because I hadn't thought through that part of it.
Right.
That sometimes adoption and then the 6 month follow up still is in effect once they're adopted, right? Because now, well, we getting into the adoptive parents is a whole nother thing.
That's right.
That's another show.
Right.
But the parents that are that adopt the child go through a whole bunch of screening too.
Yes.
But they're still part of your follow-up for 6 months.
To a certain degree. Adoption is final, we're typically visiting in the period of introduction to the adoptive family.
Okay.
Once the adoption is final, those are the new parents, and they have a new family. They call it their forever family, and it's a forever great story.
Well, see, these are nice to hear. We can end the program on these uplifting, happy notes. And I would like to say thank you for the work you do, because it is an amazing, amazing commitment. If somebody else wants to volunteer, that's what we're hoping we get now.
Yes,
this,
absolutely.
Right? What should they do?
We do have a training coming up at the end of August here in Hernando County. So if you do want to volunteer, there's a couple ways to get a hold of me. You can go to our website, and it's guardianadlitem5.org. There's a little form to fill out, name, phone number, that sort of thing. It comes straight to my email, so I'll give you a call to discuss the program further. Or they can call me. Our office is 352-754-4226, and I'm in the Hernando County Courthouse. So if you want to come up and see me, you can come up there too.
Excellent. Very, very good. And thank you so much again. I really appreciate your coming. I know you're so busy, and I appreciate the time. And I just want to say a quick thank you also to Trudy Ray, who's here. She is just listening and giving some moral support to everybody and smiling and shaking her head sometimes.
She's
too.
A wonderful guardian volunteer as well.
So. Yes. She's just, I'll say camera shy, but mic shy, I guess. But thank you, Trudy, for all the work you do too. See, she's even blushing now because I said her name. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to embarrass you, Trudy. Thank you very much,
Thank you so much.
I hope we can do another program that you can come and say, oh yeah, we've got 10 new recruits off of that.
Absolutely.
Thank you so very much. And thank you for tuning in to JB Radio. I'm Deanna Damer-Kimbrough.